Are you working on your author career but struggling to get that first book published? Does the goal of being an author seem too lofty? Or are thoughts of having multiple books and making a full-time living are as fantastical as living in Cinderella's castle? Welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where aspiring authors can be heard. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have gotten their foot on the author career path. Hear what they've done to get there and where they want to go now. Settle back. It's time for a bit of inspiration and advice. Come listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Welcome to another episode of Discovered Wordsmith, episode 79. Today I have Lily McKenzie on once again. She was on a little over a year ago, and we're catching up with her, finding out about what she's been up to. She's continued to write. She has 4 books out now, and she's also been teaching. So I like having authors on for more than once to catch up, find out what they've been doing, and know that they didn't give up, that they kept trying. And that's what Lily's been doing. So please listen to the interview and check out Lily. Before that, though, I've been doing some shout-out promos for some friends' podcasts. And on the website, you can see recommendations of all the different podcasts. I know people that run very good podcasts and I would recommend. And I've been running a promo for my friends JP and Christine. Well, now I've got a new one from Emma Desi. Emma runs, not only writes, but also runs some teaching to help authors or help people become better authors. So here, take a listen to her shout out. She can say it much better than I can.
Hi, I'm Emma Desi, and I host Turning Readers into Writers, a podcast for first-time novelists. Each week, I interview debut authors, editors, publishers, and even number one bestsellers who help you find the time and confidence to write your own first novel. Together, we'll keep you inspired, motivated, and educated on all things writing, editing, and publishing. So head on over to emmadesi.com, where you'll find everything you need to know to start and finish your novel. I'll see you there.
Thanks, Emma. And so let's continue on with our interview with Lily. But before we do, I have a thought for all you authors out there. If you spend your day staring at a blank Word document, you might be an author. Here's Lily. All right, Lily, welcome back to Discovered Wordsmith. Second time I've gotten to talk to you. How are things going?
It's been very busy. I don't know if it's good or not. I have a new novel coming out October 15th. And it's entitled The Ripening, A Canadian Girl Grows Up. And it features a character named Tilly Bishop. And Tilly actually appeared in my last novel, Free Fall, A Divine Comedy. And the publisher had wanted me to do a sequel to it. And so this particular narrative is about Tilly growing up. And so it ends when she's 18 years old. And she starts out as this innocent growing up on the Canadian prairies under the wing of a partially present mother and a Jekyll and Hyde father, stepfather, I should say. And so after the family moves from the farm where her stepfather had a place, he had really bad asthma, so they had to move to the city. So after they move to the city, to Calgary, and give up the farm, she loses her way. And, you know, she's initiated into city life. And without parental guidance, she begins a downward spiral and ends up eventually with a side trip to Toronto. She ends up eventually in San Francisco during the late 50s, which, of course, was a time of loosening mores and major change for everybody, I think. And so I think she goes through some really rough times. But I think the novel demonstrates that we have the power to turn our lives around if we're heading in the wrong direction. But it usually involves a struggle and a certain amount of pain before we can set off on a better path. And so in Free Fall, A Divine Comedy, we know that Tilly is an artist. And so I think it comes through in The Ripening, A Canadian Girl Grows Up, that Tilly is an artist in the making, that she is creating herself actually in these pages. She's creating herself, and that's her first form of artistry. Yeah, so I'm excited about, this is my fourth published novel.
Nice. This is a sequel to the last one. Did you find it hard or easy to continue the story, to make something that used the same characters but was different?
The hard part was Tilly is really zany. She's a very fun character. And it was the difficult part of the ripening is that while there are some seeds of the later Tilly in this young Tilly, there it was more difficult to make her so zany because she's going through some really, you know, difficult things. So that was a problem. People change. And so just because she is a girl isn't quite as kinky as she is as an older adult, I'm a lot different from what I was when I was a kid. I guess there will be allowances for that. And who knows if that many people will have read Freefall anyway before reading The Ripening.
So do they have to read them in order, or they could be separate?
No, they're really separate. And there's no need to read either of them if you don't want to. But yeah, no, you can read one or the other and it'll all make sense. Yes.
So you said it's your fourth book. Are you finding the writing easier or harder? Do you see some things you've definitely gotten better at and some things you're like, oh man, I can't believe I used to do that? Anything like that?
I teach writing. I've been teaching memoir writing at the University of San Francisco's Fromm Institute for Lifelong Learning. So it's for older adults. And whenever I teach a class there, I learn as much as the students do because I spend a tremendous amount of time in research preparation. And so I'm reminded, because writing memoir isn't unlike writing fiction in the sense that you have to use the same strategies. So you're creating narratives, you have to include scenes in your narrative, and scenes must have descriptive detail, they must have some dialogue, there must be something happening that creates tension and gets your readers interested. So I'm constantly reminded then of how important all of these elements of narrative are. And it just makes me, when I'm just writing, trying something out, something new, or revising old material, it's just a reminder of what to look for.
Yeah.
And
I totally agree. I've taught various things throughout my life, piano, database, a few things. And they always say you learn more by teaching than you do just by. So what got you into doing the
teaching? Stephen, I've been teaching for forever. Not forever, because I started in my 30s. And so I taught at the University of San Francisco as an adjunct teaching freshman composition. And I taught a few other classes there too, but mainly writing. And so I did that for 30 years up until 2015. And so it was such a wonderful move from teaching freshmen and having to give grades and all of this stuff to be able to teach in an environment where the students are so engaged. My first class, I went in there, I went, oh my God, I've landed in heaven. And they talk, they want to talk. You don't have to pull it out of them. They're just all so eager to offer their observations when we're discussing sample narrative. They're amazing with one another when they meet in small groups to give each other peer editing comments. They absolutely love hearing each other's stories. That's the real draw of these classes, is that they're taken into lives that they otherwise wouldn't have encountered. That's not unlike readers in general, you know, why we read, because it opens up the world in ways. So they're just, they're so there, and no grades. I don't have to worry. They don't have to worry about grades. I'm not correcting grammar and punctuation. We're just talking about them getting to the heart of the story and to get it out there in a way that whoever they're writing for is going to be as interested in what they're saying as, So it's a wonderful experience.
So have you had any of your students read your book and then ask you questions on what you're teaching and then what they read in the book?
I did. The Fromm had me give a talk a couple of years ago before COVID, and a lot of students turned up for that. And I forget exactly what their questions were, but I do know that Pinnell Publishing, the publisher of Free Fall and Fling and this current book, The Ripening, they're offering the three books. They're giving a special three books for $39.95, and it includes shipping. That's a deal. And so they've told me when I sent out a recent newsletter announcing my book launch on November 20th, I had included in it that information about Pinnell Publishing and what they're offering. And so I'd sent the newsletter, I'd included my current class in that. And so a couple of them, my publisher said and told me, a couple of them had ordered. So that's interesting. I'm actually always a little nervous.
Right.
when I know that they're reading my stuff and I think, oh my God, I hope it lives up to what I'm trying to teach them about narrative.
Right.
Yeah.
So have you had any of your students go and get a whole book and get it published and get that much out of the class yet?
I had one student who I worked with after we had worked together in a couple of classes. She had written a memoir. Let's see if I can remember the title, Virgin Vagabonds. And there's a subtitle, something to do with two Mormon girls on the road or something. But it was absolutely fabulous what she was doing. And here they were raised in this very strict Mormon household. She and her sister was a couple of years older. And in their late teens, early 20s, they took this six-month tour of Europe. They were in Egypt. They were in Spain. They were everywhere. And they had such amazing encounters. And of course, they were very attractive young women, and the guys were very interested in them wherever they went. And so they were having to deal constantly with all of these desires and impulses that had been awakened in them. And so that coming into conflict with their Mormon upbringing. So I'm still really excited about the book. The problem is that for someone like the writer of this book, who hasn't had to deal with the publishing scene and doesn't have that much confidence in herself, it's hard then. She had originally thought of self-publishing, and that would be fine. But I thought that she should at least give it a whirl out in the big publishing world, because I think it's really worth, I think it's a really, really good read and an amazing window into Mormonism and what young women and men deal with growing up within that religious framework. So I encouraged her to try some small presses or something, or even try getting an agent, but I don't think she's driven. You have to be driven.
Right.
In order to do all of this stuff. And so I don't know really where it is right now, but it certainly should out there in the world. Another student worked with me over the summer as a tutor editor, and he's quite wonderful. He, very inventive guy and very tech savvy. He started a website called Who'da Thunk It, and he's incorporating into the website these short pieces he's written, memoir, mainly for family and friends. But it's, again, it's something that anyone would benefit from going to and experiencing. And I do get some really excellent writers. Some of them have been journalists and have a background in that kind of writing, but they haven't made the crossover yet to narrative writing, the kind of writing for fiction or for memoir. And so they're in class to try and develop some of those skills. So it's such an interesting mix, and everybody has a story, and every story is so unique. And I feel really privileged to be able to be part of what they're developing.
So you said that your publishing house is putting together a bundle of books and sending them out as a special. What else are you doing to market the books that you have out, and especially getting ready for this new one?
It's really tough because you're in such competition. For example, at the beginning, I thought social media, Facebook, Twitter, etc. But everybody in the world who writes is doing that. So it's not as if you're up against thousands, more than that, of other writers who are promoting, you know, their covers or this and that. And so I'm not sure how effective all of that is. I feel that I've got a blog tour scheduled, and the person I've been working with seems really good at what she's doing. And I feel that that gives you some exposure. At least it's focused in on you. And if that particular blog has some readership, you're reaching some possible readers that you otherwise wouldn't have. And even if they don't read the book, hear your name, and if they hear it again, you're just starting to get your name out. That here I am on your podcast for similar reason. So I think that those blog tours can be useful, and you don't have to do them just when your book comes out. You could set those at anniversaries, at different, after a year, after 2 years, after 3 years, to bring attention again to certain works that you feel should be selling and maybe aren't selling as much as you'd like them to. I still pay more attention to Facebook in terms of developing some kind of community there, and we'll see. I plan to do a combination of Zoom and Facebook Live for my book launch on November 20th, and we'll see how many people I can bring in from Facebook. It's getting so many, it has such a bad rep right now. I don't know.
After yesterday.
Just in general. So who knows if people will pay much attention. So there's that. And of course, I try, my poor students, I add their names to my MailChimp email list. And I hope that maybe some of them might be interested. And so I try to build this email list. And I also try not to bombard them with many emails. I do it maybe at the most three times a year. But I also have been connecting with other writers who are good at promoting their own work. And we are cross-fertilizing. We're helping each other out. So, for example, this one Canadian who mainly self-publishes, but she's so excellent at creating these fabulous creative newsletters. And I've been interacting with her a lot, and she's featured me in one of her newsletters. And so it's this kind of thing. I'll bring in guest authors for my blog. And I think I should have mentioned this. I think having a really good website, a good blog, is important. So I blog something about reading or writing every week, every Monday. And it does, I do get visitors. And I just had my blog revamped. This wonderful tech guy in Canada, he's just made it, coordinated it in a wonderful way. And I'm already noticing that I'm getting more visits to different pages and so on as a result of doing that. So there's a lot to do. There's readings, of course, in person at least, are not too feasible.
Right.
But eventually, you know, that will open up again. And
right. And it is a little bit now. They're starting. Like I do middle grade, and schools are mostly back around. So I'm hoping that could start getting back into some schools again.
Oh, good. Yeah.
So you got a book coming out very shortly, right at the end of the year, holiday season, all that. But I'm betting you have plans for another book after that. What are you going to be working on next?
I think that I have finished in terms of writing. I have a short story collection. I just pulled it out again because I'm going to go over it and see what to cut, what to add, blah, blah, blah. I'd love to get that published. I have another poetry collection that's ready for a publisher, California Dreaming. And I've written, I don't know if I mentioned this the last time we talked, but I've written a kind of hybrid memoir called Dreaming Myself into Old Age, One Woman's Search for Meaning. So it combines, in it, I talk about how fantasy, dreams, Jungian analysis, all of that has affected me as a human being and as a writer. And trying to promote is that aging is another stage in life, and it can be approached in a much more creative way if we're willing to be in touch with our, you know, deeper selves. So that's seeking. I've sent it to two or three presses, small presses that seem interested in that kind of material. So we'll see what happens with that. But I'm eager to write my own memoirs. Now, I've written short memoirs, lots of them, and published them. But I've been thinking, why haven't I written a book-length memoir? I've lots to write about, high school dropout and mother at 17, single mother, and all of that stuff. Yeah, I've got a lot to say.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think that writing your fiction has helped get you ready to write a memoir?
Oh, sure. Oh, absolutely.
And do you have any plans to do anything else? You mentioned a short story. You mentioned you got your novels coming out and possibly a memoir. Are there other thoughts of even other things that you like to do that you might want to write about?
I love writing critical essays about poetry, about fiction. I'm a really good analyst, and I love to do it, and I just haven't had time. And so I'm looking forward to being able to do some of that as well. I love playing with watercolors and other art mediums. I haven't been able to do that for the past 3 years because I've been so busy with writing. It's taken over my life and marketing and everything.
Right.
A lot I want to do. I'd like to take some classes in old, and there just isn't enough time, Stephen, for all these things, unfortunately.
I agree.
Yeah.
Okay, Lily, I love catching up with you. I hope your new book does well. We'll make sure to put links out there for everyone to go check it out. Before we get going, you teach a class to senior citizens, older retired people. Is that the focus?
Yes, uh-huh.
What advice would you give somebody who's older, maybe approaching retirement, in regards to writing?
I had a guest author, Canadian author, on my blog on Monday, yesterday. And it was fascinating to read that she was 45 and she just raised her three kids and done all of her mothering stuff. And she said to a friend, she'd always wanted to try writing. But I can't start now. I'd be 65 before maybe something gets published, blah, blah, blah. Well, her friend encouraged her to go for it. And so I think you mustn't put limits on yourself. You mustn't put age limits or time limits or any kind of limits on yourself if you have the impulse. And I think that joining a good work and working with others who are trying to do the same thing can be really inspiring. And so, if you have the impulse to do it, don't put limits on yourself. Just step out. It's like on the tarot card of the fool. He's got his dog and he's at the edge of the cliff and he's ready to step off. He doesn't know where he's going, but he somehow trusts in whatever comes up. And I think that's how we have to approach each day. Just step off that bloody cliff.
Right.
And see where it takes you.
I love that advice. Yeah, I've talked to a lot of authors. The one guy that comes to mind, he was retired. He was a lawyer for 45 years, and he was mid-70s, and he wrote a book and had it published. And yes. I actually saw his book in a bookstore in Salem.
Yes.
And he actually traveled there and saw his own book in Salem. So that was cool. Yeah.
Let me remind you that I was 75 when my first novel was published, Fling. I didn't start writing it at 75.
Right.
I've been working on it for a long time. But yes.
Nice. Great.
Yeah.
All right.
I hope some older listeners, Stephen.
Or even the younger ones, it's never too late. Yeah, you can
never
do it.
Never too late. No, just do it.
All right, Lily, I wish you luck on your class and your book. We'll make sure and put links in there for everyone to go check it out.
Thanks very much. Lovely talking to you again, Stephen.
Absolutely. You too.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe, sometime in the near future, it might be you.